Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tapper Brothers. And we're broadcasting this week from the Brothers Keeper Department here at Car Talk Plaza.
Well, I know you're not my keeper.
Certainly not. I can't take the cigar smell.
Actually, we got a letter this week from someone who, if she's not my keeper, she's at least my defender. Her name is Linda, and I quote. Okay, you ready? Here she says.
Oh, I'm ready.
Here it is.
Go ahead.
I miss my 52 MGTD more than life.
Oh, my God.
Enough of your insults to the most beautiful piece of machinery ever created.
Another nut
Isn't
job.
Isn't that beautiful?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
The saddest day of my life was when I lost my MGTD in a divorce.
Oh, Tommy, a match made in heaven.
Here's an example of my love and devotion. One morning, I arose early to drive my British Racing Green Beauty up into the Southern California mountains to watch the sunrise.
Uh-huh.
Of course, as usual, it developed vapor lock.
Perfect.
My friend and I pushed it the rest of the way and enjoyed the sunrise and mountain air immensely. I would much prefer pushing that car up a mountain to driving in any newfangled cookie-cutter computerized heartless vehicle. I can still hear the delightful click, click, click when you turn the key before the starter is pulled and the romantic owner's manual referring to the bonnet. Count yourself blessed among all men to actually possess such a wonder.
Well, you didn't realize that this letter was sent in 1968. Yeah, I mean, if she still owned this MGTD, she'd be cursing it because just like yours, hers would have windshield wipers that don't work and no heat, no, you know, no nothing.
And I didn't lose mine to any divorce because I never had a wife that wanted it.
I never had a wife that would ride in yours.
Ride in it.
Want to go for a ride, hon? I don't think so. Well, they probably figured you were trying to bump them off.
Well, you know, my second wife never even sat in the car.
Uh-huh.
She wouldn't have anything to do with it.
Smart woman she is.
That's why I dumped her.
Oh, jeez.
Okay.
Well, Linda, get a grip, will you? Oh, God. Well, look, if you've had to push your car up a mountain recently, at least one of us will try to help you. Our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Paul from Eagle River, Wisconsin.
Eagle River.
Hi, Paul.
Eagle River.
I love it. Eagle River. Boy, that sounds like a faraway place.
It's really pretty up here.
I'm sure it is.
Lakes and trees, resort area. Very nice.
Yeah.
I just returned from a spring break vacation drive from northern Wisconsin to Florida and back. It's about a 24-hour drive each way.
Okay.
A serious domestic problem has developed during the drive, and I need your help. My 1996 Chevy Suburban has a turn signal clicker that is totally inaudible to me. I cannot hear the clicker. So I tend to leave it on sometimes.
Mm.
And however, my wife and three daughters can be sound asleep in the back of the Suburban.
And they'll hear it.
And they are awakened by the clicker. And then they announce to me in unison, "You left the clicker on again."
Yeah.
And so this is getting really annoying. Is there any way to hook up or make the clicker sound louder or hook up a siren or a strobe light or a shock collar or something?
Well, there are all those things, aren't there? There's a flasher that flashes the dash. There's the thing that goes click, click, click. I mean, they thought that was enough. But,
But I mean, it seems to me that the problem is not in the little clicking device, but since they can all hear it, the problem is you.
I think I hear okay, though. I can hear you guys. You know,
well, you're obviously not. I mean, if three other people in the car can be asleep and hear this thing going tick, 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 tick.
Well, it might be just that you're not hearing that frequency.
So you think it's me then?
Well, duh.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I said my hearing was going.
Well, you never know.
No, listen. Paul.
Yes.
You should.
A little louder.
Here's what you should do, Paul.
No, you need to see the doctor, the audiologist, you know, to get tested, to find out if you have a specific frequency that you can't hear. And you can, that flasher that's in there that goes clunk, 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 there are various manufacturers of those that have different frequencies. They're all pretty close, but you may be able to find one that's louder or a different frequency, something that you can more readily hear.
Okay.
I got a solution for you. You're going to love this.
Wire it up to the seat of your pants.
Better. I mean, this thing is relatively easy to find. It's right under the dash. Right?
And the way to find it is you turn the key on, you turn the directional on,
okay.
And you'll feel that it's a little cylinder about an inch and a quarter in diameter, and you'll actually feel it going clunk, 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 clunk.
And it's either black or copper colored.
and you pull it out, and it'll stop doing it, and you stick it back in, so you'll know when you found the piece.
Here's what you do. Next time you go on a journey with the family.
Take it out.
No. You get yourself a couple of Dixie cups, right?
Oh, I got it.
And you tie one of the Dixie cups to the little device the flasher, and a piece of string, and you run the piece of string to another Dixie cup, which you tape to your ear.
I love it.
And as you're driving, that thing will go clock, 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 and it'll be blasting in your left ear.
Are your three girls are teenagers?
Yes.
They already hate you, you know.
Yeah, I know. it's very nice.
Yeah, if you ever did anything like this, they'd run away from home and they'd join the circus in Budapest.
Think of the money I'll save.
Think of the money you'll save.
Yeah, between the college tuitions
and the weddings.
You could just retire now, man. All right, go for the Dixie Cups, Paul.
Hey, good luck.
I'll do it. Thank you.
See you later.
Yeah.
1-8-8.
Why do they hate us? We're not bad people.
No.
Yeah, well, it's part of teenagerdom.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Coco from Manhattan Beach, California.
Coco!
Hi.
Gee, if you move to Florida, you could be Coco from Coco Beach.
I should be.
You don't happen to know, since you come from Manhattan Beach, I have friends all over the world, as you know.
Uh-huh.
You don't happen to know my
friend, call them, right?
Dimitri Marcellus. You must know him.
I don't.
You don't?
But I'm new. I'm new to Manhattan Beach. I'm not originally from
here.
Oh,
you are?
So.
Well, you'll bump into Dimitri and ask him to give me a call because I haven't seen him for 40 years.
I will do that.
But you know, when you're on that walk there by the promenade by the beach,
yeah.
Right.
You'll see Dimitri. He'll be under a pile of newspapers.
Yeah, just tap him on the shoulder and say, Tom said to call him.
Anyway, what's up?
Well, I have a lemon yellow, lemon being the key word, Ford Escape.
Mm-hmm.
And at 15,000 miles, they had to put a whole new transmission in the car.
Ooh.
And now, since that point, whenever I drive over like a railroad track or a speed bump or anything slightly large in the road, the car stalls completely. It just dies completely. And I have to either put it in neutral or coast into a parking lot and put it in park and restart it.
And it starts right up every time.
It starts up right up, yeah, every time.
It was not doing this before they did the transmission. Is that true?
Right.
Yeah, so we've got to assume.
We've got to assume it's something they did, and we're assuming that it's something electrical, aren't we?
Exactly.
I'm assuming electric.
It's a bad connection someplace, and there are many connections under that hood, which, if not perfect, could cause the thing under the circumstances you described to cut out.
Because, I mean, there's other electrical problems, like the brake light's always on in the car. And
Oh, that's good.
That's good? Oh, good. Well, that's good.
It's
one good thing about my car.
What's good about it is it sort of confirms our idea that these guys were sloppy.
Boy, you're telling me.
And they could easily have left off some wires or not tightened. It's not so much that they left a wire off. I think they forgot to tighten something.
Okay.
So what they've got to do in order to find this, they've got to take the thing into the shop. You could take it to your own mechanic.
Okay.
And this person will pull on all the wiring harnesses.
Okay.
Until the thing cuts out. And
okay.
I'm going to predict that within 15 minutes, he's going to find out what's loose. That's
so
my
just
guess.
Just a loose wire then?
I think so.
Yeah.
Okay,
and,
well,
and other than that, how do you like the car?
You know what? I've never bonded with this car. I mean, some cars you know you like, but this car I've never really bond it with. So.
But you had 15,000 trouble-free miles, pretty much,
yeah.
Right?
Well, yeah, pretty much. Almost 15,000, and then the brakes and the transmission went, and ever since then it just seems to be...
Oh, really? So you've had some trouble.
Yeah, it's the lemon yellow color. I should have known. When I chose a bright yellow car, I should have known.
Well, if you did start anew, what would you start with? A new what?
Huh? Well, I don't know. I had the funny thing is I had their Explorer and I liked their Explorer. I really liked it.
Yeah, but the Escape is a more reasonable size than the Explorer.
Yeah, but there's something powerful about the Explorer.
So what? I mean, what are you? You got testosterone poisoning? What?
No. I have a 4-year-old daughter. I have to cart all her stuff around. That's cute.
You do what you think is best. See you, Coco.
Thanks.
Good luck.
Bye.
People have been carting stuff around since time immemorial. Right?
When did time immemorial start?
I think it was in the early 30s.
I think I may have mentioned my wife's uncle in France.
Yeah.
Uncle Etienne.
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 Etienne Wheeler.
Yes. Well, he needed an Etienne Wheeler. And he was a carpenter, and he had a Deschevaux.
You mentioned him. Yeah, I remember him. He was a large man, I
he
understand.
He was a 300-pounder. Yeah. How many stones is that?
There's a basic law. You shouldn't weigh more than your car.
he was just in under the wire.
Yeah.
But he used to fill his car up with himself, which was most of the village. His tools and the wood. They had that canvas top.
Yeah, stick out the top, out the roof.
And he would drive all over the countryside in southern France there, because it was nice that the weather, agreed, with what he was doing. But he did that for 30 or 40 years.
Yeah.
And he didn't have to have a pickup truck or any such thing. And when he ran out of wood, he was done for the day. He worked an hour a day. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name's Marnie. I'm calling from Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Marnie.
Ann Arbor.
What's up?
Okay. Here's my question. My father passed away a couple months ago, and we cremated him. Now, he didn't leave instructions as to what he wanted done with his remains. Oh. So we buried part of them. My mother has part of them, as do myself, my sister, and my father's sister.
Yeah.
And my father owned a 1962 Corvette.
Can I just ask one question of the producer?
Sure.
Does anyone screen the calls? I mean, what is this?
Hey.
I'm sorry, Marnie.
No.
I'm sorry.
Let me finish my question.
Go ahead. He had a 62 Corvette.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you want to know if you can... Never mind.
You want to cremate the Corvette.
If placing a small amount of his ashes in the gasoline tank.
Jeez, I was going to ask that question, but I said, never mind. I said, who would be crazy enough to want to do that?
In the gasoline tank.
Yes, to sort of combust my father into his car.
Oh, I see.
That's a very, very interesting idea.
Yeah.
Talk about being one with your vehicle.
Exactly.
So the question is, will the car run if you do this?
Well, I mean, I know it'll run, but I don't know if it'll harm the engine at all.
Well, it won't harm the engine, but it'll probably plug up the carburetor. And in fact, it probably won't get combusted, or at least not very much of it.
Well,
although it's obviously just symbolic.
Right.
I mean, you could pretend to throw the put in the
no,
it, just spill
no,
it on the ground.
You can't lie to a dead person, for God's sakes.
Yeah, here's
Is there
a better
any
idea.
Way I could sort of burn him up in the car.
What's this thing about burning? Well, you want to make him one with the car, unmount all the tires, and sprinkle a little bit of his remains in each tire and put them back on the wheels.
That's an idea.
Oh, that's an idea. I got another idea for the combustion.
The
thing runs, I presume, right? Start it up, take off the air cleaner, and sprinkle down the throat of the carburetor.
Oh, that'll be really good for the
Some
engine.
Of the remains.
Yeah.
That way it avoids the carburetor. You're sort of bypassing the carburetor.
It goes right into the cylinders.
It goes right into the cylinders, where it's much less likely to do
damage to the carburetor, but more likely to do damage to the cylinders. I think this is a bad idea.
Okay.
The tires is the idea.
And since it's already burned, it's not going to burn again. I mean, we're down to nothing.
No, you've already done it, yeah.
The tires is a good idea.
Go for the tires.
How about, this is sick, but how about the ashtray?
I mean, well,
that would be an appropriate place to be.
Yeah, it would.
Just don't empty it out.
And have it laminated.
Oh, you can have it. Oh, have it sealed up. That's a good idea.
Sealed with what?
Plastic.
Sealed with plastic.
They can pot it. His ashes can be potted with epoxy.
Sure. And then you'll never be able to use the ashtray again, but why would you want to?
Yeah.
And he would be permanently in the ashtray.
I want to say that this is right up there with our cream rinse call.
Yeah, it is. I mean, this is certainly an unusual. You may have to win the prize for unusual this week.
But I like the ashtray. You can take that thing to who would do that? Who would do that potting?
I'd look in the yellow pages under plastic. and see if there's someone that does plastic lamination type stuff.
Okay.
And they and you just bring in the ashtray with the remains in it, and they can just pour the plastic over it and seal it all right
in.
I
mean, alternatively, you can buy this stuff yourself. You can go to your home center and buy what's called bar top finish, mm-hmm. which is a two-part, which is an epoxy finish that's used to get that what looks like a one-foot-thick finish on bar tops.
Okay.
And you mix this stuff together, and it's very thick, and you would put the ashes in the ashtray and then pour this stuff on the top,
yeah.
and it would dry, and it would be in there forever.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Marnie, thanks very, very much for your most interesting
Well,
question.
I'm sure you've opened up something new for all of our listeners to think about. You know, I hadn't really
have.
Thought
I mean,
about this before.
I mean, I'm already, as you were talking, I could see my Dodge Dart with me looking up out of the ashtray.
And I can't wait till my brother goes so I can fulfill his dream.
Thanks, Marnie. Thanks for calling.
See ya.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, here's your chance, Tommy, to impress everybody. Do you remember last week's puzzler?
Yes. I remember that it was unnecessarily long, it was purposely misleading, and it culminated in a sharp left turn off a cliff. Is that it?
No, those are the directions you gave to your mother-in-law for last weekend's visit. Actually, you're right, man.
I know
that
I'm right.
That does describe the puzzler to a T, and I'll have the details in just a minute.
Yeah, I know. 1 mile out of California, I stepped into my car. When you're living in the country, every place you go is far. Windows down and the latest tape of Procol Harum on. I was on my way to see my babe 1 mile from California. The prettiest faces can lead you astray, but the prettiest places can blow you away. And even though Susan Stamberg dives headfirst into her isolation tank whenever we say it, this is NPR. Hey, if you'd like to hear more car talk.
Yeah, like if you're a dentist and want to remind your patients there are things more painful than a root canal.
You can download hundreds of classic car talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the answer to last week's puzzler.
This is going to be great.
As I mentioned last week, this came from my Arthur Conan Doyle series.
Yeah, right.
And it takes place in, of course, the English countryside.
Mm-hmm.
It seems there was a terrible accident in a suburb north of London. And Inspector Lestrade was sent to investigate, everyone knows.
Was it Redhill, Surrey, by any chance?
Yes, in fact, it was.
I thought so.
Seems that Sir Richard Ashcroft was dead, and everyone agreed it was an accident, though some suspected it was a suicide. Sir Richard had some problems with some non-existent copper mines in Chile, and then that thing with the Viceroy's grandmother. I thought it was his granddaughter, but it was his grandmother. Anyway.
A funny guy, that.
Well, Sir Richard, you
Sir Ashcroft.
Anyway, he'd been found on a steep, rocky slope, his head dashed against one of the boulders, and his mangled bicycle at his side. The facts seemed to speak for themselves. He'd gone off the road and crashed.
This was a very long puzzler, as I remember. This went on and on.
I noticed you dozed off a few times. Finally,
I'm dozing off now. That's what reminded me.
Finally, an eyewitness emerged. Nigel, Sir Richard's trusty gardener of many years. He was so shocked by Sir Richard's death, he'd been able to speak for several days. But haltingly, Nigel told his story.
Yes.
I was walking back from town up that long hill leading to Sir Richard's when I saw him riding toward me, sitting straight up in his seat, the way he always rode, and he was riding at a high rate of speed, when suddenly he jerked the handlebars to the left, and off the road he flew to his death. Lestrade asked, well, why didn't you come forward earlier? Well, Nigel said, you know, I didn't come forward because Sir Richard told me he was taking his own life, and he didn't want to shame the family, but I decided I couldn't keep a secret any longer. I had to let Sir Richard's soul rest in peace.
Oh.
So now I've decided to come forward. I saw Sir Richard take his own life by flying down this road, jerking his handlebars to the left, going off the road to the left, and crashing into that rock. Later that day, Lestrade is discussing the case with his pal, Sherlock Holmes, over cognac and a few Arturo Fuentes cigars. And Holmes says, bring the gardener in for questioning. He's the perpetrator.
Wow.
How did he know?
Okay.
How did he know?
Okay, go ahead.
Well, as is often the case, some puzzlers have... The question is great.
the question,
you'll decide for
yourself.
I
have to say that you have taken a little...
unknown fact.
A little unknown fact, and you've turned it into a little novelette. And when people hear what the little known fact is, you are going to get so much hate mail, and I just want to distance myself from this puzzler now.
Well, first of all, I have to roll up my sleeves and spit out my gum for this.
Okay, go ahead.
When Nigel saw Sir Richard riding down the road at a high rate of speed, sitting straight up in his bicycle the way he always rode, he said that he saw Sir Richard jerk the handlebars to the left and as such make a left-hand turn
and
crash.
Yep.
Well, everyone who rides a bicycle knows, or almost everyone knows, that that's not the way you turn a bicycle. In fact, what makes a bicycle stable is the gyroscopic action of the wheels. You ready? You with me?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the fact the way you make lefts and rights is by leaning the bicycle and changing the center of gravity.
Oh, that was for the sitting upright.
Sitting upright,
as he always did.
So he didn't lean into the turn.
Yeah.
But you say, well, so what?
So what? So,
but he jerked those handlebars to the left, and that would do it.
Yes.
And here's the little known fact that Lestrade didn't know.
No, because he doesn't ride his bike like Sherlock does.
And nor did Nigel.
Nor did Nigel.
The perpetrator. Mm-hmm. If you're riding at a high rate of speed and you don't lean, but in fact you decide to make a turn like that by turning your wheel to the left, the bike goes to the right. Now, my brother, being the incredulous type, decided to try this whilst on vacation on Cape Cod and did spend 3 rather happy days at Cape Cod Hospital recovering from his injuries. It's true. I'm not sure I know all the scientific principles involved, but the gyroscope wants to keep the bike going straight.
And so it goes the other way.
And so it corrects. If you try to make a left-hand turn by turning the wheel, it corrects and actually makes the bike turn to the right.
The truth
is, Nigel couldn't have seen Sir Richard turn the handlebars to the left and exit the road.
Yeah, well, I mean, I couldn't get it to happen. I tried.
You weren't going fast enough. When I told you with the car, though, you got up to speed. Anyway, who's our winner?
Well, it's Cheryl Cleveland from Lowell, Mass. Or maybe Cheryl Lowell from Cleveland, Mass. I don't know. And for having her answer selected at random from among those thousands of correct answers that we got, Cheryl is going to win a $25 gift certificate to the store at cartalk.com. And with that $25 gift certificate, she can get a copy of Car Talk Cartoons, our CD of America's best disrespectful car songs. That's good, huh?
I guess so.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll have a brand new, I'd have to call this quasi-automotive puzzler coming up in the third half of the show today. So stay tuned. In the meantime, if you have a question about your car or anything else, you can give us a call at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Lawyer on Car Talk.
My name is Gammon. I'm calling from Birmingham, Alabama.
G-A-M-I-N?
That's right.
No kidding.
What kind of a name is Gammon?
That's my name.
Well, I know it's your name, but I never heard it before.
She was imp-like when she was small, I guess.
That's exactly right.
Elfin.
My parents saw it in a movie, and they thought it was cool.
It's good. It's interesting that there are so few people who take a creative approach to naming their kids.
Isn't that true?
Yeah.
Well, I think everyone should name all their kids Gammon.
Well, I named my first child Hey Jerk.
Look, I understand George Foreman calls all of his children, all named
they're
George.
They're all named George.
Yeah.
That's a creative approach, too.
It's interesting.
Interesting, I think.
So what's up, Gammon?
Well, I have a 1988 Honda Civic, and I want it to run forever, and it's doing pretty well with that.
How many miles on it now?
138,000.
It's good.
We're going for 2, at least.
Sure.
I drove through some kind of deep water, and I really didn't mean to, but I had to get someplace, and then we had kind of a flash flood here in Birmingham, and it went up over my wheels, and that was not pretty.
What, over the top of the wheels?
Well, I was in the car, so I'm not sure, but I'm, you know, and I do tend to exaggerate, but it was kind of deep.
All right.
And it felt funny.
I got it.
I
think it didn't go over the top of your wheels. If it had, the engine would have stopped running.
Okay, no, it definitely kept running.
Good. You're very lucky. We'll explain why in a minute.
But it was up there, certainly beyond the middle of the wheel.
I think so.
you just think so.
Okay, well, continue.
Well, let me tell you what happened then. I got where I was going. That was fine, and I got home. And the next morning, I went to drive, and the car started. There's nothing wrong with the engine. But now when I brake, if I'm going fast and have to slow down quick, if I brake, it makes the weirdest noise. Like, I think it's like the Wheel of Fortune spinning or a roulette wheel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, that brrrr.
Yeah. But it stops, you know? And then, of course, the noise stopped the minute I took it in to get it looked at. And now it started again. And they told me the brakes are fine. I don't need to get anything done for a while. They've still got plenty of braking on them.
Well, how carefully did they look?
Well, I don't know.
They probably didn't look all that carefully because you can almost always see the discs without doing anything.
Okay.
Just peeking. But I think that you have a fish caught between...
I think so, too. Exactly.
And from the sound that you've described, it sounds like a brook trout to me.
Really?
It's more likely that one of two things happened. Either the thing got rusted from all that water that got in there.
Right.
And that rusting took place overnight. For example, if you did this driving through the big puddle and then you parked it for a couple of days, you could have built up enough rust on the disc rotors to have caused this problem, or by plunging a hot disc into a cold bath, you could have warped the discs.
That's true.
Yeah. Is the noise accompanied at all by any vibration or pulsing in the pedal when you stop?
Not. I kind of have the typical Honda pulsation.
Anyway.
Yeah, so I don't notice anything more than that. Just
but the car stops well?
Yeah, it stops fine.
I mean, the brakes are designed to operate perfectly well submerged.
Okay.
Yeah, they are. There's nothing there that can really be damaged. I mean, if they were submerged for years at a time, it would be bad.
Yeah.
But to get completely wet like you got them would be in no way injurious.
Okay. I would wait until you needed pads and do nothing.
Okay. Well, what I did was I got a new car stereo, so it's louder.
There you go. And now you don't hear the noise at all, and
no,
that's the
not
reason.
At all. It's really fine.
You're all set. Then.
I'm glad we were able to help.
Damon, it's a pleasure having talked to you.
Thanks.
See you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's
888-22-8255. That's it.
Okay. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Quick, you forget.
Hi, guys. This is Clive calling from Austin, Texas.
What's up, Clive?
Well, this is a story of a Camry, my teenage son, and a clutch.
Oh. No,
I don't like it already.
That's right.
We don't have to read ahead. I think we know how this story ends. Yeah, go ahead.
So we bought this car from some very, very good and trusted friends. It was in fine shape, about 32,000 miles. Mm-hmm. A couple or three Saturdays ago, both my friend who sold me the car and I had driven the car. It was in fine shape. We both drove with my son, who's 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He's a pretty responsible and good kid, and he's been driving for a couple of years.
Uh-huh.
And at about 5 o'clock that afternoon, he took it out, and a couple or 3 hours later, he called me, and he said, the car won't move. And to make a long story short, the clutch was completely...
Fried.
Burned out and fried. We had to get the car towed. Now, what I have here is I have the clutch.
Yeah.
And I have my friend who sold me the car. Unfortunately, I don't have the perpetrator who's in school at the moment. But
what, reform school?
The real question is...
Is it possible?
How could he do it in that short of a time? I mean, if someone asked me to go burn a clutch out in a couple hours, I'm not sure that I would know.
I could do it in 20 minutes.
Yeah, your conscience wouldn't allow it either.
Right.
But you could...
How long has your son been driving a stick?
No, this was his first stick. And we had taken him driving, and both my friend and I were satisfied that he pretty much had it down well. He had the normal slight jerkiness.
Oh, that's even worse. The news is even worse for him now.
Yes, well.
Because I was going to attribute this whole disaster to his ineptness, but now I have to change gears
here, so to speak. Let's be careful.
I hate to use the transmission metaphor, but... I have to change gears because I think he was out there hot rodding with the car.
Well,
because if he demonstrated to your satisfaction and your friends that he could engage the thing correctly, then if he continued to drive it for those 3 hours that he was gone in the same manner, then he shouldn't have burned the clutch out.
That's
right?
Correct.
Well, a couple of questions. One is, Do you have any idea where he was during the three-hour missing period?
Yes, we've gone over the route in great detail. He described to me the few incidents that led up to this. He said that a couple of times he would let the clutch out and the engine would rev, you know, real high, and he thought, well, maybe I don't have it in gear, so he'd take it back into neutral, put it back in gear, and then it continued.
Yep.
And then he said, finally, one time, you know, he was starting from a stop in first gear, and the engine just went, you know, into really high revs.
And nothing
and
happened.
Finally, he managed to get it going, but it smelled really bad, and that was pretty much it.
Yeah, he was revving the
Oh, you're
going to have to kill him.
No.
Oh, really?
I don't think so.
Jeez, I think so. In my heart of hearts.
You really do think so.
I hate to point fingers.
Well, I never got to ask my next question.
Were there any other kids in the car?
Were there any girls involved?
There were no girls. His best friend, Scott, was involved.
That's it.
Best friend
Scott. Here's what I think you ought to do. Get a hold of Scott. Put that little twirl in the headlock until he spills his guts. Yeah, because he's probably been sworn to secrecy by your son. But
happened was that he was sworn to secrecy. At first, there was total denial that Scott had even gotten behind the wheel.
Ah! Oh, okay? Scott even drove. Oh, Scott did it.
You think?
Oh, are you kidding?
I respectfully disagree vehemently with my brother.
You don't think Scott did it?
I don't think either of them did.
Oh, I absolutely think
Scott did it.
And I think that your son is doing the honorable thing
by
taking the rap for his friend. Scott was trying to show him how to leave rubber.
I doubt it.
I'm telling you.
You know who did it?
You lock Scott in the closet for 24 hours and he's going to come clean.
You know who did it?
Who's that?
Your best friend who sold you the car.
Oh.
See, I'm having trouble believing that if you have driven the car for only 32,000 miles and you drove it perfectly correctly, that he would, in fact, in a matter of a few hours, have gotten it worn down to the point that he got it worn down to.
I'm going to mention one name to my brother.
And I know what the name is. Judy Shanker.
Judy Shanker is a friend who had moved from Cambridge, our fair city, to New York.
She lives there now.
And came back one day to visit, and she says to Tommy, hi, she comes to the garage. How are you doing?
I missed you so much. Can I borrow your car?
And he says, oh, I just put a brand new clutch in my car.
The car had gone 125,000 miles on the clutch that I was driving. She gets in the car and she says, oh, it's not automatic. And I said, oh, man.
And she says, I'll figure it out. Well, sure enough, she goes and pays her respects to her other friends in Cambridge, and a few hours later returns with a beaming smile, claiming that she had mastered the standard shift within about an hour. She said, but I was bothered by this burning smell the whole time I was driving it, and as my brother will freely admit right here, what had she done to your clutch in a few hours?
Fried it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Clive, it's Scott, that little weasel. I know it is.
Yeah, I think it is. Well, Anthony will be happy to hear that, I guess.
Yeah, I think when you sit Anthony down and confront him with the truth, he will say, he will break down and say, how did you know? And I think when he knows that you know the truth, it'll be easier for him to admit the truth.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I will drop you guys an email if we get to the bottom of this.
All right. Good luck, Clive.
Thanks a lot, guys.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for your call. Look, we've got to take a break.
You know, most shows don't like to take breaks. I mean, they feel there's a risk that if they go away, even for a minute, they could lose listeners.
Yeah, but we know we consistently gain listeners when we go away.
Yeah, so call your friends and tell them it's okay to tune in now.
That's right, but tell them to hurry and enjoy the station because in just a minute, we'll be back with more calls and a brand new puzzler.
Load up the car, leaving by noon, off to the coast, make it by I've been aching, wondering where I don't
even though Tiger Woods slices his tee shot through the Masters clubhouse window whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR. Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and of course, the new Puzzler.
The new quasi-automotive.
So to speak. It's quasi-automotive. I may have to drop some hints here and there, but I'll read it to you just like I got it.
Okay.
This came via the internet. The date is June 1996. You know, this email's great. I mean, someone says it, it's right there.
It's right there. And all you got to do is read it.
Well, I pile them up, you know?
Well, I mean, yeah. June 1996? Really?
This came from a fellow named Dan Gallagher. He says, "You guys are such turkeys. Last week's puzzle was so incredibly lame, I feel embarrassed for you." That could have been
anything. Any one of a thousand puzzlers.
He goes on. He claims to have sent this puzzler before, and he could have. I think he might have sent it in 94, 95 also. I only got the 96 version of it, and he says, "Here it is again. Now pay careful attention."
Yeah, I'm going to.
"In qualifying for the Camel Trophy off-road race, potential drivers and their teammates were told that they had to traverse a course in as close a time as their partners without the use of timepieces like clocks and watches, etc. For example, the first man of the two-man team would drive the course through the woods, over bridges, through streams, and then return to the starting point and give his vehicle, his truck, to his partner, who would then drive the same course and try to finish it in as close to the time of his partner. So if the partner finished in, say, 4 minutes and 25 seconds, the other guy would try to duplicate that. But how could he do that? Without the use of any kind of clock or timepiece, how could he possibly finish in the same time?"
Ooh.
That's the question. Wow. So the guys that won the race figured out a way to finish in the same time. It had nothing to do with a string and a lighter, but it's close. Now, if you think you know the answer, write that answer on the back of a $10 bill.
Ten?
Or three fives. And send it to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238. Or you can email your answer from cartalk.com. If you'd like to call us, the number is 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Ian from Olympia, Washington.
Hi, Ian. What's going on?
I got a 87 Saab Turbo, and when I put it into reverse, it's a manual. When I put it in reverse and let the clutch out, it will start to go backwards, and then
it'll pop out of reverse.
Yep.
Oh, you poor guy.
That's too bad. $3,000. Next call.
So is it just a new tranny?
Well,
new rebuilt or used.
Wait. It only happens in reverse?
And second gear.
Okay.
The second gear, I can explain. It lost its synchro, I'm pretty sure. And so I just pretty much grounded in the gear, and so I think it's down far enough that it won't stick in because it's been ground so
right.
much.
Right, well, the pieces that got ground off of second gear are what's popping it out of reverse. But in any event, you can choose to... you can live without second gear, too. I mean, you shift it from
exactly.
first to second, and then when it pops out of second, how convenient. You shift into third.
I know.
Or skip second altogether. Second is a vastly overrated gear.
And how far can you drive before it pops out of reverse?
I've gotten pretty good so that I can reverse on flat surfaces. But if I had to reverse up a hill, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you have to avoid those situations.
I've been driving with this for about 6 months, and so.
Yeah.
You know, I would
live with it.
I would say either tough it out as long as you can. And you've done 6 months so far, so, you know, I think you're on the home stretch here.
Well, he wants out for good behavior.
And if only there were an additive that could fix this.
Yeah.
We'd recommend it to you, but there isn't, and you're really going to have to either bite the bullet and have this thing rebuilt, which is going to cost you, I would say, at least $2,500. Not breathing anymore. Ian! Ian!
You chilled out.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm pretty much a starving college student right now, so...
Yeah. Live with it.
This or a bicycle.
This is going to build character, Ian. This is going to make you a better person.
That's right.
Okay.
It's going to make you work hard so you can buy an expensive car that works.
There you go. Good luck, man.
All right, thanks.
See you later. Bye. Bye-bye.
Hey, you know what time it is?
Time to open our Boston Marathon pre-race ice cream stand?
No. It's time to play Stump the Chump. This is the part of the show where we bring back a previous caller to find out how good or bad our advice was.
And where on the continuum lies between useless and criminally negligent.
Everybody's so picky these days. Anyway, today's contestant on Stump the Chumps is Kim from Charlottesville, Virginia. Kim, as all our callers are, is an art history major, and even though she was very busy working on her Friolator technique, she found time to call us about her 88 Dodge Omni.
Now, there's a work of art.
Yes, a timeless design. Anyway, it was overheating in a very bizarre way. I remember this call. The temperature gauge would shoot up to the hot zone whenever she turned on the heat. On, Jerry!
All right, I got it. Well, that doesn't
Boom.
Make any sense.
No. If the engine's overheating, the temperature gauge should go down when you turn the heat on.
Well,
right?
We were quite stumped by all of this until you, I believe, had a little brain drizzle.
I did?
Yes, I remember it well.
The overfill reservoir.
Okay, I've got it.
You've solved it.
I have got it.
Go ahead.
You are going to love... I could kill you! This is going to be so good.
Get it over with, because you... The longer...
No, even you are going to love... You're going to say, how the hell did you figure that out?
The longer you applaud yourself, the harder the humiliation is going to be to accept.
Get this.
I'm ready.
Okay.
You have a leak such that it is squirting.
Oh, this is the most bogus...
Hot coolant is squirting. Are you ready for this?
Onto the temperature.
On the temperature gauge.
Oh, no.
Boy, when you go for it.
I really go for it. I didn't leave myself any way out of this, did I?
No wiggle room. Was the term up the river mean anything?
All right, let's just get right to it. Kim, are you there?
Hi.
All right, Kim, before you reveal to the world whether I'm a genius or a moron again, my brother has to read you the common Miranda warning.
Here yes, have you ever worn fruit on your head? Is it true that the answers you're about to give here on Stump the Chumps have in no way been influenced by our staff, the staff of National Public Radio, or the maintenance workers at Yankee Stadium?
Yes.
All right, was my brother right or what?
He was completely off base.
Ah!
There weren't any leaks anyway.
Oh, it felt so good, though.
Well, I hope it felt good.
Well, did you ever figure out what it was?
It's the head gasket.
What?
They pressure tested it 3 times, and it was only when the heat was on that they found that there was a leak in the head gasket.
If I'm not mistaken, that was one of my suggestions. Was it not, Kim?
It was.
And what happened? You know what happened? You got wowed by the flash. My answer was nice and quietly stated. I mean, I didn't. There was no big fanfare. He comes up with the I got it. I thought he spilled a cup of coffee in his lap.
No. Even you, when we discussed the head gasket issue, I remember even you saying it doesn't make sense that she turns on the heater and the gauge goes flying up.
No.
It didn't make sense. It still today doesn't make sense.
I do remember having said that I've seen it happen like that. Didn't I say that, Kim?
I think you mentioned that with somebody else who had a similar car.
Yeah. I mean, he's my older brother. Jeez. Well,
it sounded so good to me, at least.
Yeah, well,
all of the mechanics that I mentioned that to looked at me like I was really nuts.
You didn't tell them who said
it. Right, and then I told them where I got the information.
Oh, well. Well, so your car's all fixed?
No.
No.
Now the engine is sputtering.
Well, I mean, I hate to argue here, but... I mean, it's possible that you do need a head gasket, but it may not have anything to do with the strange behavior of the temperature gauge.
I don't think...
I have to appeal.
You ever heard the term, cut your losses?
I'm sorry. I have to appeal this decision. Oh, the appeal was denied. Okay, well, easy come, easy go.
Kim, thanks for playing Stump the Chumps.
You're welcome.
I'm sorry that our answer didn't help you. But you will live to fight another day, I'm sure.
Yes.
Did you get a job yet?
No, not yet. I'm still working on that dissertation.
Oh, okay. And are you practicing your verbal skills? Do you want fries with that?
No. See you, Kim. Are awful.
Good
Artistry
luck.
Artistry is a noble profession.
It is, I know.
Okay.
Good luck. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Hey, if you hear someone you'd like us to bring back for Stump the Chumps, please email us your suggestion from cartalk.com.
Why wait? Call us and stump us right now. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Biju Rao from Williamstown, Massachusetts.
Whoa, say it again.
Biju Rao from Williamstown, Massachusetts.
Biju
Rao.
That's right.
And where are you from?
From
India.
Williamstown, Massachusetts.
Williamstown.
Now. Yes, that's right.
Oh, were you born there?
Oh, no, I was born in India.
Biju Rao. I love Indian
That's
names.
That's almost as good as Arup Gupta.
Almost.
Almost.
Where is Arup? We have lost contact with Arup.
Well, the last we heard, Arup was sailing across the Atlantic in his Suzuki Samurai.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. So Biju Rao, what's up?
Well, I have this real serious problem. I fall asleep at 10 o'clock every night, precisely at 10 o'clock. even when I'm on the road, I fall asleep at 10 o'clock at night. And it's a problem.
It is. It certainly could be a problem, depending on what you happen to be doing at 10 o'clock.
Well, but if I'm driving.
Yeah, then it becomes a problem.
That's right.
Well, it is a problem unless you plan ahead. For example, I would make sure that if you're going to leave the house at 9:30, you put your jammies on. So if you do fall asleep.
Yeah.
You know.
When they find you, you'll have your jammies on.
What I usually try to do is to smoke two strong cigars and two strong cups of coffee.
Ah, then yeah. Does that help?
That helps for a bit, but then after 20 minutes, I fall asleep again.
How long have you had this problem? I don't consider it a problem.
It might be a blessing.
Maybe, yeah. I wake up at 5:30 every morning, so.
I mean,
that's your problem.
See, I would like to have this problem. If I knew that no matter what, I would go to sleep at 10 o'clock, then you could always, if you're going somewhere on a plane, you could always arrange to take 9 o'clock flights. So that you'd get in, sit down, have a little snack, and bingo.
That's actually what I do, yeah.
You do? I'd love to have this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a similar problem, except that the time is not the 10 o'clock. It is,
six.
It's a sofa. If I find myself in the proximity of an occupied sofa, I lie down and I'm out within a matter of maybe 45, 50 seconds. You know, it's a wonderful thing.
But I don't know why the car seat allows me to sleep. I mean, I only started driving a year ago, and maybe that's what it was. I always used to sit in the back seat and just fall asleep when people drove me.
Ah, of course. This is a case of conditioning.
Maybe.
Right. Somehow.
It's carryover from your childhood.
That's what I probably. Yeah.
I mean, do you have a real question, Biju?
That's my question.
That's it. Oh, that's it.
No.
I don't think it's a problem because you can plan on it.
Okay.
You can use it to your advantage, as you've discovered on airplanes.
What kind of a car do you have?
A Honda Civic.
Okay. Well, there are a couple of ideas. You could certainly trade that thing in.
Okay.
And get something with a much bumpier ride.
Oh, that's a good
which
idea.
Which would keep you awake. Or you could merely put like 75, 80 pounds of air in the tires. And you'd be bouncing down the road, and you'd never fall asleep.
Then you'd have bladder problems of bouncing around.
Well, that would also keep you
that
awake.
That would keep you awake, perhaps.
Perhaps. Is there any way of making my car louder? Is there any way of doing that?
Sure. You got a screwdriver?
Sure.
A hammer?
Yeah.
Crawl underneath.
Okay.
Punch three or four holes in the muffler.
And that'll do the job.
Oh, that's it.
Okay.
And punch a few in the gas tank while you're under there.
Yeah, and the oil pan is nice, too.
No, actually, I remember my brother-in-law used to drive all the time. My brother-in-law was one of New York City's finest.
Yeah.
And he used to drive at the end of his shift, whenever that was, to his cabin in upstate New York, in Unadilla.
Mm-hmm.
And frequently, he would do this after working a double shift.
Wow.
And he would find himself nodding off at the wheel. How do I know this? I was with him many times.
Thank
I would be,
God!
I'd be talking to him, and I wouldn't be getting any answers, and he'd have his chin down on his chest, but the car would still be going at 70 miles an hour. And we bought for him a little device that clips around your ear.
Uh-huh.
Yes, we bought one for Tony Hatoon, who has the same little problem.
Yes.
And what does this device do?
And when your head begins to dip, when it goes off level, it sounds an alarm which wakes you up.
Well, that's neat.
Yeah. It is really neat.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it bothered him so much that he put it in the glove box and never used it.
Kept him awake, he said.
But you may need one of those, Biju.
Oh, where do I get one of these things?
I don't know.
I don't remember. I was in a catalog.
Yeah, it was in
I'm sure someone will tell us.
Oh.
And when we find out, we'll email you.
Yeah, what usually happens like this, when we mention a product like this on the air, the manufacturer sends us a couple.
Oh, wow.
So we get your address, we'll send you one.
Oh, thank you very much.
See you later.
It is actually a great little device. I think it actually worked.
Well, it did. It did.
But you notice that Claude doesn't use his anymore, and Tony doesn't use his either.
No.
So there's something wrong there.
No.
I don't know what it is.
I tell you, it was bothering them. It was keeping them awake. Well, it's happened again. You've blown off another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are David the Calves of Belleville Green and Catherine Frau Blucher Fenolosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare, assisted by Connie Pritchard. Our engineer is John Carton Parati. And our theme music is by David Dog Grisman. Our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Wellfleet, pickled beet, pig's feet, pommes frites, possum meat, puffed wheat, and pear confit, all you can eat spring retreat, is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Haywood Jabuzoff. Our personal makeup artist is Bud Tugley. Our personal hygiene advisor from the Tokyo office is Oteka Shower. Our staff bicycle tester is Maya Sertz. Our cleanliness inspector is Adolf DeFleur. Our museum guide is Desdemona Lisa. Our videographer from the Tel Aviv office is Shlomo Replay. Our Russian chauffeur is Peekoff and Dropoff. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. And the head of our Working Mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is U. Lewis Dewey, known to the Buddy Rich wannabes in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and above all, don't drive like Tommy.
And don't forget, don't drive like Rainy.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1315, download classic Car Talk episodes, or check out our 25th anniversary swag all over at cartalk.com. This week featuring something I've actually been meaning to talk to you about.
Are we going to have the personal hygiene talk again?
No. I actually want to talk to you about automotive hygiene. We have a professional detailer's guide to cleaning your car.
Really? What do you think he would suggest for my car?
For your car? I think cruelty-free varmint traps and maybe then a match.
Check out Car Talk's tips from a detailing pro all this week at cartalk.com. Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though 17-year cicadas decide to make it 34 years next time whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.